New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Moreno is a MAGA mistake for black families. If Moreno is elected senator, he'll push to eliminate diversity, equality, and inclusion programs as part of the racist MAGA Republican Project 2025. We've come too far to let extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. MAGA Moreno is a mega mistake for Ohio. Register to vote by October 7th at ohiovoterguide.org and re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. Paid for by Win Senate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined as always by John Hodge and J.C. Abbott. Today, we're discussing the Calgary Stampeders post-game locker room altercation. Oh, boy.
Whether the Hamilton Tiger Cats can make the playoffs.
The Edmonton Elks suddenly facing a quarterback controversy.
A wild weekend in U Sports football.
New Indigenous logos from teams across the CFL.
And Canadian Football Hall of Fame fullback Neil Lumsden donating his brain to concussion research. But first, the Saskatchewan Roughriders finally won a post-Labor Day game this week, doing so for the first time since, this is not a typo, 2021, when the Green and White beat the Calgary Stampeders 37-29 at McMahon Stadium. The Riders are 6-7-1 and 3 points ahead of Edmonton for third place in the West Division. How confident are you Saskatchewan makes the playoffs this season?
I'm fairly confident, and I got, you know, a decent amount riding on this, fellas, that I don't necessarily want to get into, but I do believe that right now the Riders are the favorites to get that sixth and final playoff spot. If you look at the East Division, I think we know who's going to make it there in some sort of order. It's probably going to be Montreal, Ottawa, Toronto. Yes, the Argos could still leapfrog the Red Blacks. The Ticats, though, are coming on strong. And I think they're perhaps interesting in terms of a crossover. I know they're thinking possibly leapfrog Toronto to get in that final spot in the East. But if you look at the West Division, Winnipeg up there, I would say they're the hottest team in the CFL right now after that dreaded start. Hodge knows all about it. BC, to me, is a team that I feel like if the Riders finish strong, could potentially pass. But I do feel like Saskatchewan coming out and winning what was a must-win game, even though I think in pro football, every game is a must-win game, it had to be done for their playoff chances and to be the favorites here with 4 games left on their schedule.
I do think that the Saskatchewan Roughriders will make the playoffs, and we'll talk a little bit more about the Ticats and their quest to make the playoffs a little later on in the show, but I thought that the addition of Reichwell Armstead was absolutely sensational. That offensive line has been exceptionally beat up in Ryderville this year. They've got 6 offensive linemen. That's a full unit plus extra man on the 6-game injured list, and if you've got a young offensive line, the best thing you can do, right, is push the ball along the ground. Now, Calgary is arguably the league's worst defense along the ground, so you could argue that maybe that was part of the equation. But I thought that the physicality that Reichwell Armstead brought was sensational. And though I don't think he's capable of doing that every single week, because when you've got that type of workload, your body is going to break down. I love that the Riders, at some point, presumably, we'll get a fresh A.J. Ouellette back. We'll presumably get Frankie Hickson back with a little bit more breath in his lungs. And if you've got a trio of backs, plus Thomas Bertrand-Hudon, who I think is an underrated player as their Canadian running back, I think that you can really start to build an identity around pounding the ball along the ground. And then, of course, you've got Trevor Harris, who gets the ball out super quickly, makes life easy for his offensive line, ultra accurate, and I think can tee up some big passes to guys like Kian Schaefer-Baker, who I thought was sensational in that game against Calgary, and Sam Emilis, among others, using play action. The defense has always been fine in Saskatchewan this year. They actually arguably had one of their worst games of the season this past week. But when that offense is clicking, running the ball as well as they did, playing complementary football, especially between the running and passing game, I think this team is going to finish third in the West Division.
Yeah, and I think a lot of credit goes to Mark Mueller for that offensive performance. The offensive coordinator there in Saskatchewan, sticking with the run game when it was working, feeding Reichwell Armstead, what was he there for, 5 days before he stepped onto the field, giving him the touches he needed and not panicking at any point and trying to force too many passes, even with Trevor Harris playing exceptionally well, only 2 incompletions in that game. He had an extremely balanced offensive attack where he played the hot hand. That hasn't always been the case this season. This hasn't always been the case in recent years in Saskatchewan, and hopefully it's something that he's going to continue going forward. What I'm really interested to see is how Armstead is going to look next week, because he's facing off against the red-black team that cut his butt earlier this year, and we know the reason they cut his butt is because he couldn't keep his head screwed on straight during intense games. Is he going to have another big performance, or is he going to blow his top with everyone looking at him next week? That will be the key for me in deciding whether or not he's going to be a driving force for the Riders' playoff push.
A couple notes on Reichwell Armstead. He was the first running back in the CFL to rush for 200 yards or more in a game since William Stanback in 2021. Credit to you, J.C. Abbott, who actually beat the CFL statisticians Steve Daniel and Jeff Creever to that one. But full credit to the aforementioned Daniel and Creever for the next stat. Armstead had the most rushing yards in a single game since John Cornish in 2013. You got to go back further than a decade to find that one. And then in terms of franchise history, he had the fourth highest single game total. George Reed, of course, the legendary Rider, is atop that list from a single game perspective, but fourth highest. And, well, we're going to get to it later, so I'll tease you. He set a CFL record that we'll talk about in the 3-minute drill. There was another record set in that game, and it was by Trevor Harris for his completion percentage. Full credit to Rough Riders historian Rob Vanstone. He set the best completion percentage mark with 18 or more pass attempts in a game because of the completion rate that he had, 88.9%. And Harris, to your point, JC, attempted, count them, only 5 passes in the second half. You mentioned it, and I want to touch on it a little bit further. Full credit to Mark Mueller for simplifying the offense for Reichwell Armstead to learn it. Full credit to Mark Mueller for changing the offense. Clint Rakovich was not on the roster. That was something that, and we talked about it on the podcast in training camp, guys, that they were going with an American fullback. Well, they pull Rakovich, off the roster, and I think changed the dynamic of their offense. The key question to me, though, fellas, in Hodge, you were mentioning Frankie Hixon and AJ Ouellette, is that if Hickson's healthy, I still think you're rocking with Rock, okay? You're still rolling with Armstead. If AJ Ouellette gets healthy, then what do you do? Because the Riders all season long have only been dressing one true tailback. I know Thomas Bertrand, who don't, is there, so I don't want to knock him, but he's largely a special teams guy. He can play multiple roles on their offense, and he does have some carries on his resume. But really, it's been one guy at that position. And Armstead, going into this week against Ottawa, facing his former team, you got to stick with the hot hand there. And yes, it allows time for Ouellette to get healthy. But if you guys were making that decision based off just one game, albeit, but a great game at that, who would you go with?
I mean, I would go with Reichwell Armstead, but ultimately I think the more important thing is to get multiple running backs on the roster. I mean, you mentioned Clint Ratkovich not dressing. Well, theoretically, that's an extra American spot, right? To be the best thing a running back can be is fresh. Like, we've always seen in situations where a new running back comes in, it's not uncommon for them to go off, partly because they've got fresh legs and they're going up against defenders who are hurt, right? And there are no healthy players in the CFL at this point of the season. There's guys who are hurt and there's guys who are injured. And if you're hurt, you're playing. If you're injured, you might still be playing, but if not, you're out, right? And so if you've got fresh legs, you're healthy, you're ready to go, as a running back, it's a lot easier to look really good. Now, obviously, if you're going to be touching the ball 30 times a game, you're going to run out of steam pretty quickly. So to me, if I'm the Saskatchewan Roughriders, I say, okay, we've got three guys we could play. By the way, to further this point, AJ Ouellette looked sensational the last couple of years when he was trading carries with Andrew Harris and he was trading carries with Daniel Adebaboye, and he was a group guy. The Riders paid him a bunch of money to come and be their bell cow, and that did not work right at all. I think AJ Ouellette will be best if he is used in tandem with somebody else. If you can deploy a group of running backs, getting all three on the roster, not likely, but if you can get two of these guys and rotate them through, try to keep everybody fresh going into the playoffs, I think you got a good chance. Now, if you're the Riders, the downside of the postseason is that at some point you're going to be playing indoors, which is not necessarily the best place for the ground and pound type game. That being said, if you go indoors to play the BC Lions, that team has not tackled very well as of late, and the Riders could easily still flip them in the standings and potentially get that game to Regina, which I think would give them a much better chance of beating BC than if they have to go into the Dome out west.
Yeah, to me, it's Armstead for now, because AJ Ouellette hasn't shown you anything this year. That's as simple as you can put it. As much as he's being paid and as much as his resume from the past dictates that he should be the starting guy, he hasn't done anything of note since arriving in Saskatchewan, and it's largely been a disappointment. Now, that's a lot of stuff that's health related. I believe he's been banged up basically since week one, so that's not all on his shoulders. But if you've got a guy who's healthy and who's pushing the pile and who's being successful, you ride with him. I don't love the idea of putting both of them on the roster because I think that limits you elsewhere. I also think it's not a great thing to have a tandem of two running backs who have similar styles. Both are physical downhill runners. If you're going to put two, you want a flash and thunder combo, in my opinion. What I could see happening down the line as we get into playoffs and later into the season, if Ouellette gets healthy, is sort of a similar tandem model to what the BC Lions had a number of years ago with Anthony Allen and Jeremiah Johnson, where, okay, you get one game, and then we give you the next week to recover, we'll play the next guy, and it's only when we get to the nitty-gritty of the playoffs that we have to make a decision on to who's the hot hand.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hessilo V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
The Calgary Stampeders reportedly had an altercation in their locker room following their loss to Saskatchewan, during which the Stamps gave up over 200 yards along the ground. JC, you wrote an opinion column based on the situation. Is it time to burn the regime to the ground and start fresh in Cowtown?
It absolutely is. There is no redeeming feature to this Calgary Stampeders team right now, and defenders of them will say, well, look around the CFL. Every single team this season has had this dark patch with the long losing streaks and the struggles. Yes, I'll grant you that. But you know what every other team has also had? Winning streaks and periods of success. The Calgary Stampeders have not yet won back-to-back games this year, and I don't think they will the rest of the way. This is by far the worst team in the CFL. And they're coming apart at the seams, right? Josiah Coatney and Trey Roberson Jr., Senior get into it in the locker room after this game in a shouting match. Of course, that grabs headlines. But what really struck me was reading some of the comments made 2-3 weeks ago to TSN by the likes of Reggie Begelton, where he essentially called his teammates entitled little kids that aren't listening to them, that aren't wanting to hear how gritty they used to be back in the day when they walked uphill to school both ways, right? Those are not the types of comments that come out of a cohesive locker room. And right now, this team is at each other's throats. They don't have enough talent. They have not paid the right guys to be in there to have a competitive football team. They have mismanaged it from the top down, and they are going to miss the playoffs this year, guys, and end the longest playoff streak in North American sports.
JC, that opinion column was absolute fire. Dave Dickinson asked for media coverage last year when you were in Vancouver, and oh my goodness, did he ever get it with how you laid things out there in Calgary. I want to get to, let's call it, the talent drain, because for years, the Calgary Stampeders could let somebody go who was going to get more dollars in free agency than what John Huffnagel was willing to pay them, essentially. And they would just bring in the next player, develop them, and on they went, competing for top spot in the West Division and also Grey Cups. That hasn't happened recently. There have been a number of name brand players that have left this team that the team has not been able to replace. I understand at some point you have to fall within the constraints of the salary cap, but the biggest one is smacking us right in the face. The Stampeders felt like Bo Levi Mitchell was done and Jake Mayer was the guy. Well, right now, Bo Levi Mitchell is the only quarterback to have thrown for 4,000 yards this season. And if he finishes the year hot, fellas, this is a bit of an aside, could get over 5,000. That might seem a bit far-fetched, but I'm just telling you, he's had an ultra-productive year, and you kind of start continuing to go down the list. Like, look at what Kadeem Carey is doing in Toronto, running physical, running mad, perhaps because he wasn't offered what he felt like he should have been by the Stampeders, so he's out for something to prove. You look at a bunch of guys on defense that you can go down the list on that they let walk and decided to re-sign, let's say, a James Vaughters, who I don't think has lived up to his contract value. So there's a whole bunch of guys Royce Metchie would be one of those. Tavares Daniels would be one that you can look at on both sides of the football there that were core Stampeders that were not brought back, you know, for various reasons. But I'm just saying, could have been part of this team continuing that playoff streak, but they're not there anymore.
Yeah, the most egregious one to me would have been Florin Ermolade, who was let go to the Toronto Argonauts via free agency. Now, he got a boatload of money. He was, I believe, the most highly paid defensive lineman in the CFL when he signed that deal with Toronto. That being said, Calgary used the cap savings to go out and sign Julian Hausser. And Julian Hausser is not a bad player. I'm not going to sit here and try to dunk on Julian Hausser. But the guy has 8 sacks since the start of last season. Julian Hausser to me is like a replacement level player. He's a serviceable starter. Florin Ermolade is a complete game changer. And like the one and only time Calgary decided to open up their wallet on day one of free agency and go get a guy, they get Julian Hausser? Like, really? That's your big answer to losing for Florin Ermolade, who you spent these years developing and is now arguably the best edge rusher in the CFL? That move never made sense to me. They did also go out this past offseason and get Demario Houston, which has been a solid addition, though he did drop a terrible, should have been interception against Saskatchewan this past week. To me, the most egregious example of Calgary's complete mismanagement of their roster this year is the fact that Trey Odoms-Dukes has been a healthy scratch on the one-game injured list for all 14 of this team's games this season. And for the uninitiated, when you're on the one game injured list in the CFL, your game check still counts against the salary cap. And as such, the league allows teams to put healthy players on the one game injured list because there's no cap savings. There's no advantage to having healthy players on the one game. You're essentially creating an extra roster spot for your team. The same is not true for the six game injured list. If you're on the six game injured list, your game check is cap exempt. Therefore, you have to genuinely be hurt to be on the six-game injured list. Now, I don't think teams always abide by that, but in general, they do. Calgary could have put Cam... And by the way, we're talking about Trey Odoms-Dukes, a guy who's got over 18 career regular season games, a little under 800 yards. Instead of putting him on the practice roster where they could save a bunch of money against the cap, instead of dressing him over somebody, right? Like Cam Eccles has not been very productive for this team at all this season. Instead of doing that, they've just kept him as this extra guy. Are they worried that if they cut Trey Odoms-Dukes, someone else is going to sign him? Maybe. But I also don't think that Trey Odoms-Dukes is the difference between this team making the playoffs and not making the playoffs. And the reason I bring this up is because I've talked to people around the league who are like, why have they paid Trey Odoms-Dukes 14 game checks against the cap? This doesn't make any sense. It's very normal for teams to carry one extra guy for maybe a week or two before putting him down to practice roster. But to carry a guy for 14 games who's apparently not good enough to dress? What is going on? Like this roster management does not make sense. That is something that has stuck out to me. I track all the depth charts each week. That has stuck out to me so much that they've got this healthy receiver who's not, oh, he's too good to go on PR, but he's not good enough to dress. So we're just going to pay him. Is he going to be on the one game for the rest of the year? I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me what Calgary's doing. They're terrible against the run. Their defense is ranked bottom three in most statistics. Their offense is ranked bottom three in most statistics. The only exception, they're really good at completing passes. Their completion percentage is very high, and they never take sacks, which tells me they're getting the ball out super quick and not much else. And, you know, I think that there are some great coaches in Calgary. Like, I don't think Brent Monson, who's been a great defensive coordinator in this league for many years, woke up, you know, week one and forgot how to coach. I don't think that's true for a lot of people on that staff who are very good at their jobs. I think there's a talent problem in Calgary, and it needs to be fixed.
Yeah, I want to make myself very clear as well. Like, I'm not calling for anybody's job specifically. I have a lot of respect for a number of people in Calgary, both coaches and personnel people, scouts, who I think are wonderful at their jobs and do things at a very high level. But this is a organizational structure failing right now by the Stampeders. And frankly, I think they may be the only team that failed to adapt to the new era of scouting and personnel management as we went through the COVID pandemic, right? It became more difficult to bring in young, talented Americans when we got spring leagues popping up and there was the canceled season driving them away. And so every other team compensated by the fact that there was a lot of available existing talent on one-year deals that they could bring in free agency. They could spend to compensate there. They didn't have to rely so much on rookies, but Calgary would not adapt to the changing of the times. They stuck with the model that had worked for them forever, which was just bring in and replace. And there was not enough guys there to make it worth their while. And so you've seen this slow decline. And every time they get worse, well, fewer people want to come and be a Calgary Stampeder. There is no longer this aura of dominance that can attract people when they need to bring in talent. That does not exist. And in fact, they're repelling people with some of those roster management moves, like you talk about with Trey Odom's Dukes Hodge. I can think of one in Trevon Tate, the offensive tackle who they brought in free agency and then later released after he spent a bunch of time on the one-game injured list for no apparent reason, when they were paying him over $100,000 to be a starting tackle and then didn't start him, right? They are doing those things. He comes out in the media and says a whole bunch of nasty things about how Calgary jerked him around. Players understand those things. They read those things. They remember those things. And right now, the way Calgary is being managed from the top and the directives being given to everyone underneath them is not conducive to winning football.
The one note I think that we should make, fellas, is the fact that, and I'm curious if you guys agree with me, because I think you will, we don't hear marketing money being doled out by the Stamps to the level that we do, especially some of the other teams in the league. Agreed?
Agreed.
Yeah, I mean, they have what I would call the cheapest ownership group in the CFL. And that has, I think, certainly held them back. The question is the ownership group changing in the near future? The answer is no. So they got to find a way to make this work.
I'm just saying, to be fair, right? You will have some of the guys in the front office there say, well, you know, we can't offer the kind of marketing money that other teams do. And that playoff bonus guarantee isn't there anymore. Kind of, JC, that's something you were getting at. You knew that if you signed a little bit of a bargain rate contract for the team, that you're probably going to at least play in one playoff game, if not two. That's not the case anymore in Calgary.
Well, and now the pitch is, hey, come play in the worst facilities in the CFL for a non-playoff team, and we will not give you marketing money. And we're going to lose a lot of games. That's a really bad position to be in.
The Edmonton Elks fell flat on offense against Winnipeg this past week, leaving head coach Jarius Jackson noncommittal about who will start at quarterback when the teams meet again on Friday at Princess Auto Stadium. Dunk, which passer would you start and why?
You know, I do have some pause on this decision, but I would start Canadian quarterback Trey Ford, not just because he's Canadian, but because he is your future. And at current moment, he nor McLeod Bethel-Thompson are under contract past the 2024 season. But if I'm trying to, what would the words be? Fix some of the damage that was done by Chris Jones and his treatment of Ford during his time there in Edmonton, then I'm starting Trey Ford because I want him there for the long haul. Did he look great against Winnipeg? Absolutely not. He needs to clean it up, cannot turn the football over like he did. But I think there's more at play here. Obviously, Edmonton is trying to make a push to get into the playoffs, so you need to start the player that you feel can best do that. But Trey Ford has already been jerked around so much by this organization since being a first-round pick by Chris Jones, by the way, which is so befuddling to me, the way that he treated him during his time there, that I think that the future should play at least a little bit of a factor.
I thought that, and this is easy to say in hindsight, but with all due respect to Trey, I thought the Elks made a mistake maybe not necessarily in starting him, but announcing it when they did, right? The Elks played 2 weeks ago. The Bombers played 2 weeks ago. And post-game, despite the fact that McLeod Bethel-Thompson was super hot, Jarius Jackson says, well, we're going to go back to Trey after the bye. And it's like, okay, so if you're Jordan Younger, the defensive coordinator for Winnipeg Blue Bombers, it's like, well, I got a week off. I can do nothing but watch Trey Ford film. And I can sit and I can watch Lamar Jackson film. I can watch how all of these defenses on both sides of the border are dealing with these ultra mobile quarterbacks. And what Jordan Younger did is, like he has for lots of this season, he rushed three defenders on second down. But instead of having a spy in the middle of the defense, someone who Trey Ford is easily going to be able to outrun to the sideline and break contain, is he put two guys down in the box as spies using Tony Jones, Jake Kelly, Michael Ayers, like rotating through a group of defenders. And what happened was the Bombers had six guys deep in coverage, seven guys deep in coverage, and Trey had nowhere to go. Like, he had nowhere to run. The windows were tight enough that he wasn't super keen on pushing the ball down the field. And maybe the counter argument is, well, of course you start Trey this week because now he has a full week of film on what the Bombers are going to do to try to shut him down. Fair argument. But to me, when you prep for McLeod Bethel-Thompson and then get Trey Ford, that is such a cheat code because the defense has to do literally everything differently than it once did to try to stop Trey Ford. And if Jarius Jackson, who is a rookie head coach, could go back in time, I bet almost anything I own that he's going, man, did I ever shoot myself in the foot. I should have just clammed up. As a member of the media, I love that he came out and said Trey Ford. But I talked to some people in the Bombers organization right after that announcement came out who were like, wow, surprised he said that. And I said, well, of course you're surprised. Mike O'Shea won't tell you who's starting the game until the first down and the kickoff. But I do think that this is a case where the Elks could have handled this situation a little bit better, at least maybe waiting until day one of practice when Trey Ford takes the first team reps.
Dunk, I understand your point about Trey Ford being the future. It's one I've made on this podcast before. But for right now, the Edmonton Elks are looking at the playoffs, not 2 years from now, not building something afterwards. They want to kickstart this team by getting into the postseason, by getting butts back in seats, by becoming competitive again. And right now, based on what we saw in this last game, McLeod Bethel-Thompson gives you a better opportunity to do that, at least against this Winnipeg defense. And then you can do exactly what Hodge alluded to there, which is bring Trey Ford off the bench if you need to, and throw them into chaos for a few plays while they try and adjust. If you give them Trey Ford again, they are going to eat Trey Ford again, because I think they have found a perfect defensive scheme to defend him, and they executed it exceptionally well. Not every team is going to be able to pull it off like the Bombers did, because the Bombers, I think, have one of the best back ends in the entire CFL right now. They are incredibly talented, and they showed some of their speed and versatility in the way that they defended Trey Ford. But you can't throw him out there again in back-to-back weeks when you need victories to get into the postseason. McLeod Bethel-Thompson should have started this last game. He should start next week.
The Hamilton Tiger Cats got a walk-off game-winning field goal from Mark Leggio to beat the Toronto Argonauts this past week, sweeping the season series between the Southern Ontario rivals. Unbelievable. Hodge, you are on the record saying the Ticats will not make the playoffs, emphatically, I might add, this season. Are you sticking with your pick?
Yes. They're not making the playoffs. And I'm not saying that as a hater. I'm very impressed. The Ticats deserve a ton of credit for their performance over the past month. That being said, math exists. Okay. This team has 10 points. There's four. And actually, this is a great time to have this conversation because every team in the CFL has played 14 games. So we're truly comparing apples to apples, oranges to oranges, footballs to footballs, whatever you want to say. They have 10 points with four games left. Toronto has 14, Saskatchewan has 13. Now, Hamilton has to have more points than Saskatchewan to get the crossover spot, so they need to be 4 points better than Saskatchewan the rest of the way. Toronto does not, of course, have the tiebreaker. Hamilton is the tiebreaker, so Hamilton can merely match Toronto's point total and get in the playoffs that way. So Hamilton, in other words, has to be 4 points better than Saskatchewan or 4 points better than Toronto. They go at BC, home to Winnipeg, home to Calgary, at Ottawa. If they win all four of those games, that means Toronto and Saskatchewan just have to win two of their last four, and they're at least right there. Hamilton, if they win three, Toronto and Saskatchewan have to win two. So I like Hamilton's chances, certainly at home against Calgary. I like their chances at Ottawa. The Red Blacks have fallen down and cannot get up as of late. Going to BC with the Lions coming off a bye, that's a tough game. Hosting Winnipeg, hottest team in the CFL right now. Granted, Winnipeg has struggled the last couple times they've gone to Steeltown. That's a tough one. Now, if Hamilton goes 4-0, I don't hate their chances. But, like, Saskatchewan gets to host Calgary the last game of the year. Do we really believe they're not winning that game? They've got Ottawa coming to Saskatchewan this week. I think they're going to beat the Red Blacks. They've also got Edmonton again. If Edmonton is out of it by that meeting, I like Saskatchewan in that one. And Toronto, yeah, they've got Montreal this week. That's a tough game. Toronto gets to host Ottawa still. They go at Edmonton the last week of the season. Edmonton might be out of it by then. So I don't see Hamilton making the playoffs. I just don't. If they go 4-0 to finish this off, great. That does genuinely put some pressure on Toronto and Saskatchewan. I just don't see it. I don't think the math is mathing.
I agree with you, Hodge. And it's too bad because I think the Hamilton Tiger Cats right now in their current iteration with Chris Jones commanding the defense and Bo Levi Mitchell playing the way he is are as exciting as any team in the CFL. But I can see potentially Toronto only winning two of their last four games. I can't see Hamilton sweeping the board. I think at best they are going to get to three wins, and at worst they're going to only get one, and that being against the Calgary Stampeders. I don't think it's a conducive slate for them to make a surprise postseason run. Now, the real question to me, looking at the way this Ticats team has played and statistically what they've been able to produce on offense. We had this discussion a few weeks ago about how this MOP race is ridiculous and nobody has seized front runner status. Well, Bo Levi Mitchell, as you mentioned earlier, Dunk, 700 yards above the next quarterback. He's the only guy over 4,000, 24 touchdowns. Is he legitimately making a case to be the MOP of the CFL this season, even with the losing team?
You can't have an MOP that doesn't make the playoffs. No, no.
I wonder
no.
if it's happened.
If the Ticats get in, there's an argument.
I wonder if that's ever happened.
Hodge, if anybody would know, it's you.
I'd have to go back and look or talk to Steve Daniel, the CFL's head statistician and soon to be Canadian Football Hall of Famer. But that's a good idea for Colm. Maybe we'll write that. But at the end of the day, this comes back to something that I talk about on the show. I've been on the soapbox before. I will reiterate it. My least favorite cliche, and what I think is objectively the worst cliche in CFL history is, well, the season only starts at Labor Day. Because there's always
your season
some
can be over by Labor Day, okay?
Yes!
So you better start it in June.
Thank you. The season starts in June, and the wins count just as much in June as they do in November. Now, I understand what the idea of that expression is, which is saying it's important to play your best football late in the year. And that is true. So we should just say that. Well, it's important to play your best football late in the year. Don't say that the season starts at Labor Day, because your season can be over by Labor Day, which is exactly the problem that the Hamilton Tiger Cats are facing. They are right now in the top half of our power rankings at Three Down Nation, by all accounts, if you started watching the CFL at the start of September, you'd go, wow, this Ticats team is pretty good. And you'd be right. But guess what? They're not going to the playoffs because they were objectively terrible and made a bunch of stupid decisions through the first half of the season, because the season does not start at Labor Day. It starts in June. Those games matter just as much. And you need to stop saying this utter nonsense. It's not clever. It's not. Stop saying it.
Just answer the question, okay, that the CFL likes to use, the hashtag that is. Is it June yet? If you yes. can answer yes and your season starts then, you might have a chance to make the postseason. But let's get back to JC's question for a moment here, Hodge, because I want your take on this too. The actual naming of the award is where this gets difficult. Most outstanding player. There is, to JC's point, an argument here, potentially, that Bo Levi Mitchell has been the most outstanding player throughout this season. And I do think, fellas, you look at there's four games left. He doesn't even have to play great to potentially get to 5,000 yards. Now, let's say he gets to 5,000 yards and 30 touchdowns, and nobody else is even close to him, and we're calling it the most outstanding player, that there's a possibility he could actually garner some votes for that award. I'll add on, though, is that the kind of look the league wants for this award? The MOP going to a player on a team that did not make the playoffs. Can you imagine? I'm not even going to say in the NFL, but in any other league, the MVP for the season going to a player on a team that did not make the postseason. Now, it's a little bit different in some of the other leagues, the way the postseason is constructed. Yeah. But 6 of 9 teams get in the CFL, fellas.
That's a lot. Here's my thing. I think we need to remember that for these awards, ultimately we can only vote for who the local chapter of the Football Reporters of Canada pick to be the nominee, right? There's going to be 9 nominees for what's outstanding player, which, by the way, sucks. Because, for example, like, Tyrell Ford and Brady Oliveira can't be the 2 finalists for most outstanding Canadian, for example, because they play on the same team. They can't even be nominated at the division level together, which we talked about on the show before, is silly and outdated. Bo Levi Mitchell, I think it's safe to say at this point, will get the Hamilton Tiger Cats nomination for MOP. Here's the challenge. Some people, because you mentioned it, Dunk, this is not a most valuable player award. It is a most outstanding player award. I think some people are going to make the most valuable award argument in favor of Cody Fajardo, who is the starting quarterback for the league's best team. Here's the problem. Cody Fajardo has 13 touchdowns and 6 picks. Those
and
are not
Davis Alexander
numbers.
Came in and played well.
Well, that's exactly it. Without Cody Fajardo, the Montreal Alouettes are 3-0. He's not the most valuable player if the Alouettes have only not won 3 games this season. Cody Fajardo started all of them. They lost to Toronto in one-sided fashion. They lost by over 10 points to BC, and they tied Calgary, a team that has been miserable for the last 6 weeks, so much that they're fighting in the locker room after the game. Davis Alexander went into Saskatchewan and won. Now, there were 4 missed field goals in that game. I get that. But still,
you may or may not have stepped on the line, but I agree with you.
But a win is a win is a win, right? There was no drop-off from Cody Fajardo to Davis Alexander, and there's been no lift-off from Davis Alexander.
It's not to say that Fajardo's not valuable. We just don't
think he's not valuable.
The most valuable in the league.
And right now, the numbers would indicate, and I think the eyeball test would indicate, that Cody Fajardo is not more valuable to the Alouettes than Davis Alexander is to the Montreal Alouettes, which is a credit to Davis Alexander and how well he played in that stint. Because if you remember, he didn't start the first game Cody Fajardo went down. Caleb Evans did. And by the way, Caleb Evans helped them win that game. Davis Alexander did most of the heavy lifting, but technically Caleb Evans is 1-0 as a starter. So I think it would be somewhat of a black mark on the league, yes, if the MOP did not make the playoffs. That being said, MOP got an MOP, right? If you got 5,000 yards and 30 touchdowns, I feel like it would be stupid to arbitrarily give it to somebody whose numbers were far less impressive merely because they played for a better team. So I will agree with that. But I think the more we're talking about it, this is the good basis of an article. I'd also love to know, has the NFL ever had an MVP who didn't make the playoffs, or a most outstanding offensive player or defensive player of the year, right? Even other leagues, I'd be curious to know. Has the NHL ever had an MVP who missed the playoffs? These are good questions that I think are important to know the answers to.
Well, the NFL once gave their MVP to a kicker. So
this is true.
Can't get more embarrassing than that. To me, it's irrespective of your team's record. If you're outstanding, you're outstanding. This is a team sport. One guy cannot take you over the top and compensate for everything else. And I don't think it's a black mark on the league if you've got a guy with a losing record who wins your MOP. I think we can especially throw out that argument after we just spent this whole last offseason discussing how the MOP himself was the biggest black mark on the entire league, right? Like, that was the discussion all offseason. I think Bo Levi Mitchell, even if he doesn't make the playoffs, would be a step up in terms of PR for that particular award. He still wouldn't have my vote. At this stage, I'm going with Tyrell Ford and then Roland Milligan Jr. in Saskatchewan, but I'm not convinced other voters are going to do the right thing and vote for DBs, even at the team level. I think you could see Tyrell Ford not get any award nominations in Winnipeg, potentially with Brady Oliveira doing what he does on offense and some of the other conversations there. And if that's the case, well, to me, Bo Levi Mitchell, as the best quarterback in the league right now, becomes the guy by default.
I'll throw one out here, fellas, while we're having this discussion, at least at the moment, okay, just after week 16 has finished, that I think there's a strong argument there for Brady Oliveira, because I think when he found his form again with this team, that really led to this push to get them back in top spot in the West Division. His numbers could be, by the end of the season, somewhat close to what he did a year ago. And a lot of people, I think, you know, probably some of us on this podcast, were saying he should have been the most outstanding player in the league. I'm not saying he should get it because he didn't get it last year, but I think there's going to be an argument to be made for Brady Oliveira because of some of the reasons you guys have laid out, especially what JC said about the lack of, how can I say this nicely? Maybe shouldn't even say it. Voters wanting to vote for defensive backs.
I do think there's a very good chance that Brady Oliveira will get the MOP nod in Winnipeg. For full disclosure, I do not get, or at least in the past, I have not had the opportunity to vote at the team level, but I have voted at the division level and at the league level for the past few years. I think Brady Oliveira at this point would be an excellent choice for MOP, and something that I think could really help him at the league level get the votes if he is, in fact, the West Division's nominee is twofold. One, he didn't win this award last year. As you said, Dunk, arguably that shouldn't matter. But guess what? That will matter with some of the voters. Some of the voters will say he didn't
win
last year.
Because people didn't want to give Zach Collaros three in a row to put him in the echelon with Doug Flutie. So that stuff, as silly as it is, it does come into fruition.
And the other factor is that at this point, if I were to make a prediction, I would say he's going to be up against Cody Fajardo, whose numbers from the East Division are not very impressive, or he'll be up against Bo Levi Mitchell, whose team is unlikely to make the playoffs. So if you're a voter going, okay, it's between Brady and Cody, who am I voting for? I think you vote for Brady because his production is much better. And if the choice is between Brady and Bo, I think you vote for Brady because Brady's team is in the playoffs. And I think that's how voters will decide. And to take people behind the curtain a little bit, I think I do have it in my record somewhere, the list of voters for these awards. The way that it works is you get a ballot digitally from the CFL. I think last year there were 57 people who cast ballots. We are not privy to who else people voted for, but generally speaking, people are more than happy to disclose who they voted for.
Some people, some not so much.
No, some not so much. There is a room at the awards where they, you know, it was like this in Regina. It was a very nice facility in Regina at their concert hall in 2022.
You're going to lockdown, bro. Turn your phones off. It's old school. You ain't talk to anybody.
In 2023, we were in a little room in Niagara Falls for the awards. But yes, we get the results before the show starts so that we can prep content.
It wasn't a little room. That was a nice restaurant.
Yeah, okay. The restaurant was a nice size.
The falls? You hating on that, calling it a little room?
Well, we were in a little area. I guess would be a better way to say it. I didn't think
you were left
something to be desired, but
I didn't think you were paying attention, Doug, because you were too busy watching Guelph reruns, which is not a joke. That is actually what Doug was doing.
He was actually
what Doug was doing on his laptop. He was watching old U Sports games while eating dinner.
Okay.
His own games. His own games.
I just got digital copies of the games. And bro, how much time do we have to wait?
There was a lot of
there?
Time to kill. Yes. There was a lot
you
of time to
kill. You guys looked at some
this
highlights.
I did.
Don't hate.
Yes. I'm not hating. But regardless, the point is we find out what the percentage is. The percentage is not publicly announced, but they do tell the media what the votes were. So-and-so got X number of votes from the, you know, X number of voters. So you could, but I mean, you also, in the days leading up to the event, you do have conversations with members of the media about who they did vote for. I am perfectly happy to make my entire ballot public because I do think it's important to be held accountable from fans and people who care about these awards, including the players themselves. Right now, I'll tell you, if I had to vote for MLP today, I for me, it's between Brady and Bo, who I imagine the division finalists will be, especially with Oliveira getting into the end zone two times this past week. And by the way, Brady had 2,000 yards from scrimmage, 13 touchdowns last year, one of the best seasons in CFL history by a running back. This season, he's on pace for 1,700 yards and only 3 touchdowns. Now, I do think that touchdown number will spike because Chris Streveler is out for the year and Brady's going to get a lot of those red zone touches. But he's only at 2 right now, which we'll see. If he can get to 6 or 7, I think that really changes his perception.
That's easy for the voters, though, Hodge, because people can just look at Chris Streveler, who has 10 rushing touchdowns, and say, okay, yeah. Well, how many could Brady have?
Yes. Yeah, at the end of the day, I think that a lot of those would go to Brady Oliveira. Now, I think it's a little bit, you know, questionable whether or not we should be voting for players based on what they would do, right? But I get what you're saying. Brady Oliveira should have more than 2 touchdowns. He's not gotten the same red zone opportunities as most other players in the league, and he will be getting more of those opportunities moving forward.
To me, the argument about against Brady, and I respect what he has produced. I thought he should have won the award last year. I thought he was robbed of it by Chad Kelly. But when it comes down to it, A, I don't think he's the most outstanding player on his own team. I think that's Tyrell Ford. I think what he's done at cornerback has been special. And B, if you look at the comparison between him and Bo, I think you have to acknowledge that Brady is a lot closer to the next leading rusher than Bo is to the next leading quarterback. And some of that is just health related. A lot of these quarterbacks haven't played as many games. They have not started every game. Bo, for the record, hasn't started every game either. But Brady is less than 100 yards above William Stanback in terms of his rushing totals. I'm sure the receiving totals gives him a little bit of a boost. But Bo is 700 yards above the next quarterback. And I think if that lead expands, he gets over 5,000, which when was the last time we saw a quarterback go over 5,000? It's been a few years, has it not, in terms of putting up that type of number? Then I think you have to give it to him over Brady.
Bo Levi Mitchell was benched this year. Hodge, can you put that in your notes? Has there ever been a quarterback that's been benched that won MOP?
That would be a lot
Casey
harder
Grinchers.
To track. That's a good point.
Although he was benched after he won MOP.
Yeah, which is
that's what I'm saying. In the MOP year.
It's the same year. No, he was benched going into the Grey Cup after winning the MOP.
Yeah, he won MOP and then the Lions in 2004 played Dave Dickinson instead of Casey Printers, which is crazy. That
I'm
whole
saying
season
in the year, though, like in the year.
That it would, I would know. Like in the regular season before.
I guess
the
they were
voting,
kind of going back and
point?
Forth. Yeah, that was my point. Yeah. But I know what you mean.
But you're right in that every year when it comes to the MOP is truly its own year, right? There are so many factors at play that are exclusive to that one season. And that is part of what makes this exciting to talk about.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
The U Sports regular season has officially reached its midway point. Which of this past weekend's games stood out the most to you, JC?
Well, there were some exceptional games on the slate, but I want to shout out maybe an unusual one because it's not a get between two powerhouse teams, but McMaster getting the victory over Carleton 36-34. Good finish to this game. But the reason I want to shout it out is because there's a player for the Marauders who I don't think we've been giving nearly enough love to this year, and that's quarterback Keegan Hall. He sort of gets lost in that conversation when we're hyping up Taylor Elgersma, who, of course, threw for over 400 yards this week as well, 3 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. But Keegan Hall puts up 423 yards, 3 touchdowns, and scores on the ground to get his team the victory. He has been exceptional thus far this season. Truly, he's in that upper echelon of quarterbacks in U Sports right now. He's not going to win any awards, I don't believe, if Elgersma stays healthy, because he'll get that heck vote out of the OUA. But Keegan Hall in any other year would be getting a lot more attention.
They do throw the ball a heck of a lot at McMaster. It's like around 70%, possibly higher. But yeah, he has been pretty solid. The game I want to touch on was an unbelievable finish down in Windsor, because I think the University of Ottawa GGs thought they had the game won, but Danny Skelton's like, nah, let me hit Liam Talbot on the second last play of the game to pull it out as the Lancers stay undefeated in an improbable finish down there in front of just over 5,000 fans.
The UBC Thunderbirds, I thought, had a bounce-back game in front of an incredible crowd out west, 9,000 people at Thunderbird Stadium. There was also a tremendous finish for the Manitoba Bisons coming back to win that game. St. Effects had a great finish against St. Mary's, but the game that I need to talk about is the York Lions getting their first non-forfeiture win since 2019, beating the Toronto Varsity Blues 19-17. This win is unbelievable for York. And listen, I know that some people might be rolling their eyes like, oh my goodness, this was just one win. You know, it's York, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I don't care about any of that. This team lost all 8 of their games last season by a combined score, or I should say a negative point differential of 518 points. That's an 8-game season losing by an average of around 65 points a game. Through 4 games this season, they're 1-3. and their point differential is negative 83. Now, that's not good. They're still going to finish near the bottom of the OUA standings. We're not going to be talking about a Yates Cup in York anytime soon. But the one-year turnaround from 2023 to 2024 has been remarkable. Like, this team was so far down in the dumps, it was going to take multiple seasons to get back to respectability, and they have taken a tremendous step in 1 year. You have to give a ton of credit to Dexter Janke, the team's head coach, who's an alumnus of the university, got hired after a stint as the head coach at the CJFL level. This is a guy, he's 31 years old. He was drafted back in 2015 as a defensive back. He was in the same draft class as Nick Dembski. Like, he was drafted 5 years after Christian Matt, who's still on the roster in Montreal. Like, he is the youngest head coach in U Sports. He's one of the youngest head coaches in U Sports history. And the one-year impact that he has made is sensational. Congratulations to York on that win. If this team keeps on its current trajectory, they are going to win multiple games next season. Who knows what the ceiling is for this program. It's now time for Hodges Heritage Moment. On this day in 2019, the Calgary Stampeders confirmed that Kadeem Carey had suffered a broken arm, ending his season. The former fourth-round NFL draft pick was in his first full CFL campaign and had run for 422 yards and 2 touchdowns over 13 games, sharing the backfield with Don Jackson, Ramar Morris, and Antti Milanovic-Litre. Now a member of the Toronto Argonauts, Carey has run for 3,727 yards and 24 touchdowns over 58 career CFL games, earning a league all-star selection in 2022. Or should I say, was named all CFL in 2022.
No.
JC, when you think of the name Kadeem Carey, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
I mean, explosive runner. Just so talented in what he's able to do. But I also think of missed opportunities like this one. For a number of his seasons in Calgary, he was banged up and he wasn't able to play the entirety of the season. Still put up incredible numbers, but you wonder what his career totals could have been if he was on the field for every single possible game that he could have played.
The first thing I think about now when I think of Kadeem Carey is him absolutely running over Adam Big Hill. All due respect to yes. Big Hill, who's a legendary defender in the Canadian Football League. That play is the first thing I'll think about probably forever when Kadeem Carey comes to mind.
Yeah, that was from earlier this season when Winnipeg and Toronto faced off at BMO Field. I'm really excited to see those two teams play again in just a couple weeks at Princess Auto Stadium. I'm not sure Chad Kelly is ready for the noise he's about to hear from Bomber fans who, I mean, don't like any of the visiting teams. I think they especially don't like Chad Kelly. And unfortunately, Big Hill will be unable to play after undergoing knee surgery. We'll talk about that in a moment. But yeah, it should still be a good game. Now time for the 3-minute drill.
Canadian offensive lineman Drew Desjarlais, he, by the way, of the University of Windsor, re-signed with the Ottawa Redblacks through 2026. It's obviously a smart move by Sean Burke, the general manager in the nation's capital, Hodge. How much did he get in money?
Well, when he has done this deal, he'll be done his fourth year in Ottawa. And after 4 years in Ottawa, he will have made over $1
million. $1 million.
Granted,
you got to put your pinky near your mouth for that.
It's not that way.
You don't want to see my pinkies. They're both crooked.
They are crooked. That's true. It's because of the highlights that you were showing us on your laptop at the Grey Cup. But... you know, the standard unfortunate stereotype is like CFL players aren't even professional athletes and they don't even make any money. And it's like Drew Desjarlais is over here with $1 million in his bank account. And that's not even including the money he made in Winnipeg to start his career. That's also not including the legit money he made in the NFL when he was down there with the New Orleans Saints in 2020.
I mean, Justin Trudeau is going to come and scoop a bunch of that. But yeah,
Trudeau is going to do that. That is true. But that's still a lot of money. TSN has reported that the BC Lions will start Nathan Rourke against the Hamilton Tiger Cats this week, following his benching before the team's bye. Is that the right decision?
It's absolutely the right decision. Rourke shouldn't have been pulled in the first place. get this out of the way early. You paid the man. You got to start the man unless he's completely stinking out the joint.
Amen.
The Hamilton. What? Amen? We're going to start a little Church of the Canadian quarterback out here.
Dunk already has for tax altar. Purposes.
Don't give him any ideas, Hodge. The Hamilton Tiger Cats have signed James Peters to a contract extension.
Hold up, Jamal Peters, my man. It's
Jamal Peters to a contract
guy,
extension.
Guy, Will Ferrell from Anchorman out here.
Is that a... James Peters is a player in the CFL.
He is a
record.
Player in the CFL. Yeah,
linebacker for the Iowa Red Black. Jamal Peters to a contract extension through 2025. Is that a smart move?
It is. He was a little bit shaky there to start his time in Hamilton, but the guy's been really good, especially since Chris Jones got to town. And perhaps, JC, as you noted, he had something to do with Cameron Dantzler, his buddy from Mississippi State, coming up to the CFL. Adam Big Hill announced on Instagram he's done for the year after undergoing season-ending knee surgery. Big loss for the Bombers, Hodge. How can they deal with it?
Well, it is a big loss, but Tony Jones has been absolutely sensational in that spot for that team. With all due respect to Big Hill, I don't see any drop-off from Big Hill to Tony Jones. I really don't. I think Tony Jones is sensational. Did you watch that game against Edmonton? A sack, a pick, forced fumble, fumble recovery. Like,
I'm not saying Tony Jones isn't good, but bro, that's a massive statement.
Well, keep in mind, I don't think Adam Big Hill now is Adam Big Hill 2018, which is not to say that he's not good anymore, but Adam Big Hill, I don't think, is as effective as he once was. Tony Jones, I think, is at least as good as Adam Big Hill is today.
I'd like you to say that to Adam Big Hill's face.
I have a great relationship with Adam Big Hill. I would happily ask him if he thinks he's the same player he was 6 years ago. And Big Hill is a class act. He would happily answer my question. I really believe that. Montreal Alouettes have officially clinched a home playoff berth. What are the odds they'll also clinch first place in the East Division?
Look, I'm sure the math says it's something like 85, 90%. It's 100%. They are clinching first place in the East. I don't think it's a question at this stage, and beating down on the Ottawa Redblacks simply proved it. Hall of Fame fullback Neil Lumsden announced he'll be posthumously donating his brain to concussion research. Is that a selfless act?
It is, and I hope that more players follow Lumsden's lead from a Canadian football perspective so we can get an idea of what happens with, and I'll say our brains, because I've talked to guys who are alumni at the University of Guelph and OUA and Canadian University Football, you know, that have various ailments and are kind of wondering about the effects, especially in this case, on our brains when we play this game that we love and cover so much at 3donation.com. Canadian running back Brady Oliveira finally got in the end zone this past week, scoring 2 touchdowns against the Elks. Then he broke out the chicken dance. I still don't understand the connection here. I know he explained, but it's not resonating for me. We talked about him being a legitimate MLP candidate, Hodge. So what's the reasoning behind this chicken dance?
So for whatever reason, I think that basically what it boils down to is teammates were bugging Brady about not getting into the end zone, and they started calling it the chicken coop or the chicken box. So to get one up on his teammates, he said, well, when I eventually score, I'm going to flap my arms like a chicken. And they all joined him. So I think that's all there is to it. I also don't really understand it, but you know what? It's fun. I just take some issue with it being called the chicken dance, because the chicken dance has multiple steps beyond merely flapping your arms like a chicken. He did not do that. I would call this freestyle chicken wing flapping.
Doing the chicken dance.
Not,
put it on social media so we can all see how
Zero.
To do it right. Come on, bro.
0% chance.
You can't say that the guy's not doing it properly, but then you
I didn't
won't
say
do
he's not doing it properly. I'm saying he's not doing it, period. He's merely engaging in freestyle chicken wing flapping. He's not doing the chicken dance. That is, the chicken dance is a song as well. It's like a polka. Anyway.
The chicken
JC
dance
probably
cannot
loves
properly
the chicken
be
dance
done.
Song. That's his
That is my jam. And it cannot be properly done unless you're also like humming the beat at the same time.
There you go.
Classic. a classic.
The Hamilton Tiger Cats have signed third-round NFL draft pick Cameron Dantzler. Is that a good move?
I think it could be a very interesting addition. Dantzler was very good as a rookie in the NFL with the Minnesota Vikings, was all-rookie team that year after making a bunch of starts at corner. Then his career sort of tailed off. He didn't quite see eye to eye with the coaching staff on occasions, and then he was hurt by injuries after he was cut by the Vikings. As Dunk alluded to, he's a former college teammate of Jamal Peters at Mississippi State. He's got a good relationship there coming into the Ticats. I think he could really revive his career if he embraces that opportunity. Rykel Armstead set a CFL record with Saskatchewan this past weekend, becoming the first player to rush for 200 yards in his debut with a new team. Should he stay in the team's number one job?
Yes, definitely for now. As for later in the season and playoffs, we'll have to see what the health of AJ Ouellette is in the stretch run. Montreal Alouettes, Saskatchewan Roughriders, and Toronto Argonauts have unveiled new Indigenous logos ahead of this year's National Day of Truth and Reconciliation. Which one is your favorite?
I think my favorite, they're all good. I think my favorite is the Toronto Argonauts. I think the Toronto Argonauts normal logo is great, and I think the Indigenous logo is an improvement on it. I love the orange striping along the boat. I love the feather on the flag. I think I'd put Saskatchewan second, Montreal third. But again, they're all good, and I think this is a great initiative from the CFL. They put out a graphic this morning on social media of all nine Indigenous logos because all nine teams now have them, which is great. And I think they're all, again, really good. I think most of them, if not all of them, are actually improvements on the full-time regular logos that these teams have, which is great. So congratulations to all the artists involved. We've got all the information details up at 3donation.com for these three new logos. Check those out. And for Justin Dunk and JC Abbott, I'm John Hodge. We'll see you next week for our next episode here at the 3 Down Nation podcast.